This week on RSBNB Update, a double XP care package arrives, signaling the future ahead. Dual arena stakes are capped at 50 mil, numerous mythical Elder God Wars drop rates are buffed, and Croesus is getting a colorblind toggle. Also, do we really need a death cost rework? This is RSBNB Update, episode 855, recorded Thursday, November 11th, 2021. Gambling with Guardrails. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Just Tanis and myself here again this week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
And of course, welcome back to our listeners as well. Another patch week, everybody getting those double XP gains in. We'll talk a bit about what we've been up to after the fact, but if you're joining us for the first time, you can check us out. Our show notes are at update.rsbnb.com. We talk about RuneScape each and every week. You can join Friends Chant, Bits Bytes. I am Shane12088, and he is Tanis79. All right, so we're going to start off with, let's just rip the Band-Aid right off. I was just going to go into this, but I have to warn people that this is a Band-Aid ripoff kind of thing we're going to be talking about here with the new double XP care package. Available from the 8th of November until November 30th. How did you feel when you saw this?
Not surprised in the least.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, am I to a point to where I'm just conditioned now to where I don't really even have any feelings about it? Like, I don't buy it if you want it. Don't buy it if you don't.
Yeah. And I think this is a sign that the last bundle actually worked.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because this one's actually much more lucrative. It costs a bond, and you get 15 pulse cores, 15 cinder cores, 4 large skilling dummy traits, which each of those gives 4 dummies, so 16 in total, 5 medium protein packs, 5 portable packs, 12 protein power-ups, 1 large dwarven toolbox, 5 combat dummies, and 3 aura refreshes, and this can be purchased up to a maximum of 5 times. Not available for Iron Man.
You can buy it 5 times. Now that part I didn't realize.
Yeah, it's right there. And that's kind of why I was leading into that question. So, I mean, if we assume a bond is 38 million, you can spend up to 190 mil on this.
Okay, and a bond is about
38.
Still 7 bucks?
Yeah, 7 bucks. Okay. You spend 35
bucks. So for 35 bucks, you end up with like 75 pulse cores.
Yeah. And 75 cinder cores. And 16 large skill training dummies. 25 protein packs. 25 portables. 60 protein power-ups. 5 toolboxes. 25 combat dummies. And 15 aura refreshes.
That's last until the end of double XP?
No, it lasts until November 30th. You can buy it up to November 30th.
All right. Yeah, I mean, why not, right? I mean,
get Black Friday in there too, right?
Hey, why not? Not going to lie, I'm going to buy 5 of these as soon
really?
As I get paid. Hell yeah!
You serious?
Damn straight, dude. Those what? Like so. Like I have a hard time getting a hold of pulse cores and stuff because I use most of my oddments for bonus XP. Right?
Okay.
I dump it.
School
well.
Me on how this your thought process here, because the only thing I see useful in here for me, the way I play, is the cinder cores and the skill training dummies. I don't use any of the other stuff in here.
Well, it's all like, dude, this is all stuff that comes out on when we do the time to train promos.
Yeah.
Like the protein stuff is excellent. The dwarven tools.
Those are the ones that give either double produce, double items, or double XP.
Yeah, they're awesome.
But are those usable with beautiful. The XP? That's an important question. Yeah, keep talking. I'm going to Google that.
I would think so, but I don't even use them for that. I always use them for double resources anyway, right? Usually.
Right.
Yeah, geez. Everything there to me is useful. Now the portables I don't really care as much about. But it's always nice to contribute those to your clan or whatever if you do skilling Sundays like we used to do or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean I'm thinking about the cores. Like, because there's no other way that I'm ever gonna get cores like that. And you know, one of these double XPs that will come up, maybe the spring one, I'll have enough, you know, I'll have enough beans to where I'll have enough growth potions that I'm going to be wanting to run cinder cores when I'm doing the farming training and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and for what, $35? That ain't very much.
No.
Like,
and you know, I think the thing we also have to point out is you still have to do the training here, obviously. Just a quick look. Apparently, the Dwarven Chain Axe cannot be used during Double XP Live, and that's the only restriction on the tools.
Okay, but do you know what you do with the Dwarven Chain Axe anyway?
What?
All right. I've done this during XP competitions. You get yourself some woodcutting brawlers, and you go out to the Wildy.
Oh, boy.
And you have people drop divine use.
Uh-huh.
And you go to town.
Oh, because the demonic skull would also work for that too, right?
Yes. And the XP is sick. It's sick.
Like, well, there's another use for the wilderness that I'd never considered before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You just have to watch where you do it and have, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to make sure you don't get surrounded. All right, so you've made a case for the toolboxes. What about combat dummies? Like, we all have 99 combat. What's the point in what are you going to do with 25 combat dummies with 99 combat snakes?
Well, I mean, I still need 120 defense, maybe. That might be the only one I have left. Yeah, that's the only one I have left.
So. All right, fair enough.
I always just mess around and do that, yeah.
Okay. I know I would jump up and down for the ones if I could just replace everything in this care package with large skilling dummy crates and, you know, get Slayer dummies. Because I've said jokingly and I'm perhaps half serious or maybe three quarters serious that my favorite Slayer training method right now is the Slayer skilling dummy.
But you know you're onto something there. I wish
oh,
those
really?
Were. Yeah, I wish those were there, and not just for the Slayer, but I mean, think about the agility ones, right?
Yeah.
And who wouldn't want a box of those?
And that's probably why there's only four of them.
Yeah, probably.
And you can't buy them from the Oddman store, but you know, with this, Vic the Trader is in town. You can pick those up from Vic.
That's true. You could get those.
Did I just connect the dots in your head of something you're going to try?
Uh-huh. Totally.
I'm actually going to go see what the cost of that is on Vic right now. Vic is in game from the 8th until the 22nd.
Hey.
And I know we were talking a bit about this in pre-show and whatnot. You doing any exchanges with Vic this time?
I hadn't planned on it because what I've been doing has been, so normally I used to use Vic to convert all the XP and all the skills that I was getting, you know, from daily keys that I didn't need. But instead of doing that,
it's not really that much of a problem anymore, is it? Because everything feels so prismatic.
You get to pick it. I always pick prismatic and if I can't, then I switch them to oddments. And so between those two things, I don't have the copious amounts of bonus and skills that I don't need. That being said, I mean, there's probably some here and there that I'm definitely going to go down there now and see if I can get enough for some of them skilling crates.
Yeah. And, you know, in hindsight, throughout all of this double XP business, I should have been, you know, buying my daily cap when they were on sale of lamps with my oddments, because I know we always have advertisements in clan chat of when that happens. Oh, good. I have 11 Vic credits. At a large skilling dummy crate costs 200 Vic credits. I don't even know if that's a good conversion rate. It doesn't feel like it.
I'm telling you, man. I don't think that it rolls over. I really don't.
Well, my bonus XP is only in Dungeoneering and Slayer currently. And if we look at Slayer, for example, I could get 228 credits, and the first 100 or so, I believe, I could, or 828, and I could get the first 250% off. And I don't want to trade that in to see what that is, but I honestly think every time Vic comes in and it feels this way, that the rates reset themselves in terms of conversion, because I know you were concerned about that.
Yeah, how much bonus do you have?
Like 4 million. In Slayer.
Okay. That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm not going to give all that away, because I'm 100% convinced that I need this bonus in Slayer and Dungeoneering to finish those off eventually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you don't want to get rid of the stuff that you're actually
going to use. Not 4. I thought it was 4.8. It's up to 5.7 now.
Okay.
In Slayer, and 1.1 in Dungeoneering. So, but nonetheless, Vic the Trader is back, and I think it opens up some interesting opportunities if you have the extra Vic points lying around and you combine some of the things in the double XP care package with Vic the Trader. So I think the A-B test of direct purchase was a success, and we are now seeing the benefits of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we knew that it would be.
Yeah.
It was just dependent on what form it was going to come in.
Yeah. Let's just play a little game here. Let's strike out the 12 protein power-ups and replace them with 12 huge prismatic bonus XP stars. Does that change the equation of this, if it's acceptable?
It changes the equation on if how useful it is.
Yeah.
It becomes a hell of a lot more useful, right? So here's the thing about being acceptable. Does that change, if you think about it in political terms, right? Would this sway the independents, if there are any out there on this? I don't think so. I don't really think that sways the people that are, you know, indifferent to it. And the people that are against MTX are against MTX, and there's nothing that's going to make them, think otherwise. People that are for it, I think it has to be really gross for them to, you know, be like, oh, no, we need to stop.
All right.
And in that regard, I don't think it matters.
Let's remove the pulse cores then. And add in, instead of 15 pulse cores, keep the 12 huge prismatic stars there. Let's add 12 huge smoldering lamps. Once again, what is the line of acceptability on this?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you draw the line? Where does the player base draw the line? And where does the internal metrics say is the sweet spot for this? Because we all know that smoldering lamps are one of the best promos on Treasure Hunter for making money. What if you put a dozen smoldering lamps, huge smoldering lamps, and huge prismatic stars in one of these packs?
You would need what would to charge the engagement? More for it.
Yeah, you'd probably have to take it up to 2 bonds.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't even think that's
probably not enough, right?
No, I still think people would, you know, fall over themselves buying them.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing, man. Whether people admit it or not, They wouldn't do it if they didn't sell. They do sell.
Exactly. And, you know, there's always this huge question of what does direct purchase XP look like? We floated the idea of, you know, lamps available in the store for oddments, which we have, and being able to buy oddments directly. But in reality, is this any different from that?
No, that's what I mean. Like, we knew this was coming. I probably would have preferred it to be in the form of oddments, because I think that was a built-in infrastructure
bit more accessible.
That you didn't, and more accessible. But this, I mean, it's just a different version. It's just a different package.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, too, because they're selling these packages where some of the items you don't really care about, some of them you do.
Yeah.
I think if we're going to go down the road, I would rather it go down the road. You know, I want to buy a la carte. Like, I don't want the combo platter. I want to buy a la carte. I want all this other crap. I'm not going to eat my beans and rice anyway, man. Just bring me my fajitas.
Okay, you know, fair enough, Nick. I get it. Oh, that's amazing. Well, I mean, I guess we'll just have to watch this and see what happens in the next Double XP Live event, because this was for this one, and we know what's been happening in terms of direct purchase and in terms of Treasure Hunter over the past, you know, couple months. If there's going to be more of this, well, I think we just open the door to that here. And
this,
you know, this is a reason I don't look at the site that shall not be named, because I don't even know what their response to this would be.
I don't need to look at what the response is.
I feel a whole lot better about having an unbiased opinion going into this than seeing what they might be saying. So,
well, I mean, it's very predictable, right? So it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not really gleaming anything. You're not getting an insight from that.
Right, and that's the thing. So,
and is this really any different than? Actually, it's better because you know exactly what you're getting. But every double XP, they'll run time to train promos, right?
Yep.
And usually there'll also be like an XP promo before a double XP. So you usually get both of those. All this is doing is putting it in a package, and you know what you're getting.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. All right, let us move on then. We're going to move on into the patch notes. There was no live stream this week, but there will be a live stream on Friday unveiling something Christmas-related, perhaps another Yak track. Put simply, we don't delay the show for live streams unless we know what the contents of that live stream is going to be. We did that once or twice, and it was just better off in the end that we discuss it the following week once we have had more time to form opinion on it. So that's why we're not going to have any coverage of the Friday live stream about the next series of updates coming into the game. But with that, we can move on to patch notes. So, Duel Arena. You can now stake 50 million coins per player, per fight.
Mm-hmm.
I went and tested this. If you put more than 50 mil up, or if say you put 60, 75, it'll just put 50.
Oh.
Okay. So you can still punch in, you know, 100 mil and it'll just put 50 up on the thing. You can't stake items there. I don't know when that was taken away. I think you used to be able to stake items a long time ago, but you can't anymore, of course. Alongside this, you can no longer stake within the Conquest minigame as well. So these are two changes that were, of course, made to combat real-world trading, they say. Yeah, Conquest.
I don't remember being able to stake in Conquest. The little chess game?
Yeah, the little void chess game.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I think this is going to warrant a whole discussion on this eventually. And a lot of the things that we were kind of leading to on this was that it was going to be a question of whether or not this was being done for a real-world trading problem, gambling security, or something to the effect of money laundering. And honestly, I think it comes down to the fact that this was being used for railroad trading, and it was having a negative economic impact on the game's cash flow, because otherwise it wouldn't have come out in concert with other changes that we're starting to see in old school and what will likely happen with RS3 as well.
Yeah, I don't know about like the game cash flow and all that. I will say that at first I wasn't buying the whole sorts of real world trading.
Yeah.
Until I talked to somebody that goes down there, and he's like, "Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, it goes on." He's like, "That's probably the biggest source of it in the game." I'm like, really?
Right. Because you can't tell if a stake is legitimate or not, right? You stake somebody, and there's so many people, you know, just doing it to gamble, and in effect, like they used to do to double their value, right?
Mm-hmm.
But somebody out there runs a gold farm, goes to the duel arena, stakes with their purchaser, lets the purchaser kill them, and lo and behold, there's your 100 mil that you bought, and it looks like it's coming in through the duel arena rather than a direct trade, so to speak, that would be closely monitored. And the sense that I had with this is that, unlike the trade system, which is monitored for that, this was probably not being watched at the duel arena through the customer support lens and the heuristic tools they have. So as a result, it was a way to get past this. So they just limited it to 50 mil at this point.
And how could you tell? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, really, how could you tell? And I've heard, you know, the feedback that I've heard about the 50 mil is it just prolongs your time down there.
Yeah.
That seems to be about it. So people are still gambling. I thought it would kill it altogether, but apparently it's just kind of slowing things down where people are staying around longer. They're not blowing their wad quite so fast.
And hey, if it was a real casino, that'd be perfect for them, because, you know, casinos love it when you stay around, because you get to go and, you know, get drinks and whatnot too, right?
Well, because they always win in the long run.
Yeah, exactly. The longer you stay, the better in a real casino. Not that, of course, we endorse RuneScape gambling. So
the odds are always on the house.
Yeah, or in the case of the gold farmer, the gold farming scammer. If you get scammed. So.
And remember, kids, it's always 50-50 at the duel arena. When you go to look at your results, it will almost always be about 50-50.
And that's if you use the that's if you turn off all the abilities and whatnot and just use the effective legacy mode, right?
In a poly, yeah. I mean, yeah. You got to do it the way everyone's doing it. But yeah.
I don't know. Like, the math is clear that you can make money with this over time, I think, but still, it's not a good thing to have in-game.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's probably the last place for PvP in the game, so, you know, that's kind of sad.
Yeah, which we actually did have a monthly bit about that I'll tell you guys all about later.
All right.
So... all right, but of course we'll be watching what happens when this is replaced in the new year with something that is apparently going to be Elder God Wars themed, so that's going to be interesting, seeing this piece of content that's been a staple since 2002, I think, get removed. Next up, implemented some feedback to remove the junk chance on the Igneous Stone. This is now set to 0%. Yeah, so...
Who was breaking this down?
Well, after you get your capes, that's what you do with the Igneous Stone.
Okay. Is it like a coveted component?
Yes, they are, actually.
Okay.
You get a guaranteed chance now. Previously, it was 1%, but now it's a guaranteed chance. You get a guaranteed chance of getting any of the special materials. So that's your Armadils, your Ascending, your Avernix, your Bandos, Brassican, Psywear Explosive, Noxious, Shadow. So, you know, all those components that people used to spend tons and tons of money on to get the best in slot perks that the Wish has let us do earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
You have a 1 in 29 chance of getting any one of these if you disassemble your Igneous Stones from Zook. And for people who have made their tactics for fighting Zook in such a way that they can, you know, get a boss fight done in, you know, 22 to 25 minutes or so, you're looking at around 4 of these components an hour, possibly.
Yeah, but you don't know which, like you said, it's 1 in 29. You don't know which one you're going to get, so, but there's only, like, what, 3 or 4 of them that are coveted, that are really expensive.
Yeah, but I mean, it's better than nothing, right?
Yeah, but it's like doing the fight kill and getting an Onyx in the end, right? I mean, is it really worth it?
Well, if you get your Illusionkin component.
Yeah, you're 1 in 30 chance.
I mean, I'm not saying it's worth it. I'm just saying that there's reason to have it at the end of the day. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good patch note, right? You don't want to get junk at the end of that, but
yeah,
braver person than I am with more time, you're breaking those things down.
Yeah. I actually want to go back and do another Zook run properly, because Hurricane is my current Reaper task. I just haven't got around to it yet from earlier this week.
Do hard mode, Shade. I'll get you a sword.
No, we're not doing hard mode yet. No, I've looked into that, and I'm not there.
Fair enough.
So, balancing adjustments have been made to the Krosis Front skilling nodes. Those are the nodes outside the boss encounter. They will now exhaust at a reduced rate, and enriched nodes remain active for 90 seconds, so you're not consistently hopping around.
That's good. Those ones were kind of hard to find, too.
Yeah.
They're hard to see.
You know, they're decent XP, and apparently some of the soup and funguses are actually selling for a pretty penny, though I never really use the funguses, the fungal soups, or the potions.
I've never met anyone that did.
Right.
Maybe that's becoming a meta now.
That's because we're min-maxing.
Everybody
I go with is on a specific role and doesn't want to have, because what these soups do is they reduce one of the opposite roles in terms of its effectiveness, in terms of gathering. So you don't want to be caught in a position where you sign up for wood cutting and somebody messes up and you need to do some hunter at the end of the day. You don't want to wind up in a position where your rate is reduced.
Right. So these are for the teams that are like, very well-oiled and they know which role they're doing.
Yeah, and then they're not messing up. Or another place that I would use the fungal soups personally is if I was doing public encounters and I wanted to do nothing but woodcutting. Which actually still do work this week, I must say. I tested some public encounters on Sunday.
And just be like, hey, I'm jacked up on soup, man.
I'm staying woodcutting.
I gotta stay woodcutting.
There actually seems to be a meta now down there that people who do Krosis public wait for the energy funguses at the 2:20 mark before praying. And starting it just to get that extra contribution points. So, things are working surprisingly. A month plus later.
Nice.
The Pernix Quiver that comes from the Elder Troves can now be dyed in all of the usual colors: red, blue, yellow, green, purple, orange, and black. And this is another good reason to go do Slayer or do anything at the Elder God Wars front. Chance of getting one of these trove pieces. I did an hour Krosis on the weekend and I got 4 trove pieces, and each trove piece this past weekend was selling for 5 mil a pop. I made 20 mil.
Damn.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Just wait till I tell you how profitable the rest of the hour was. Igneous capes can now be used to fight ice strike worms, just like the fire cape could. And wearing any of the igneous capes will now allow you to get ice strike worms as slayer task. And the wording behind this infers that, you know, it might be, you know, kind of similar to one of the slayer mask things, but I tested this and it must just add it to the list. So if you like ice strike worms, you can now use your igneous cape.
Okay.
We also had some issues the previous week where the back button and escape functionality key would not work after closing a parent interface. And alongside this, fixed an issue that was causing the escape key and backs button on mobile to no longer close parent interfaces. This was hot fixed last week. Here's one that you might find interesting. You can now Smith upgraded items with the base item in your inventory when your inventory is full, so you don't need that extra spot.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Now, here's one that probably made somebody cry. Using an augmenter dissolver on a dyed dark sliver of Leng will no longer remove the dye.
Oh, you think somebody would contact support over that?
I hope support was generous in that case.
Oh, God. Oh, how bad would that suck?
Billions down the drain.
Man. Yeah, that's rough.
Added a login check to convert any old raffle tickets into Lucky Dip tickets. Players can now preview bond packages on the marketplace, even if you don't have any bonds. And a couple changes for PVM here, in that the wave counter in the fight caves is no longer located in the middle of the screen on mobile. And an issue.
Yeah,
that's a pretty big one.
Pretty big one.
And an issue has been fixed where the boss HP UI element blocked a large portion of the screen as well on mobile.
Oh, boy. Come on, guys. But that's okay. Better late than never.
Yeah. Updated the wording of the mobile lobby prompts when being pushed into the game, and this was used to improve general language consistency. And what this means is things like text buttons have been updated. This can be seen for any of the plus buttons in the mobile header bar. Game launch messaging has also been updated to show the world number when pressed. So previously it would say logging in, and now it says joining world, whatever you're joining.
Yeah.
And then we move back to the Zekar front in the sewers, where some of the items have had an increased drop range. So they say Elder God Wars has released a whole bunch of chase items. However, we're seeing prices sky high as demand increases, but low drop rates are failing to meet this demand, resulting in an unpleasurable experience for both buyers and boss killers. So drop rates for the following items in the Elder God Wars dungeon have been dramatically increased. The Magma Tempest Codex has been increased by 100% in both normal and hard mode. And this, last I checked, was still selling for about max cash stack. It's going to be changed in the coming weeks or so to be a revolution ability. But lo and behold, lots of money there. Mm-hmm. The Scripture of Full has had its drop rate increased by 100% in both normal and hard mode. For Carapac, pieces of the Fractured Staff of Armadil have had their drop rates increased by 66%. And pieces of Zook's Sword, the Ek-Zekil, have been increased by 66% as well.
Okay. So
and
we're
these
still...
these were the items that were, you know, selling for, 3 to 5 billion each when you put them together.
Yeah, these were the mythical drops.
Yeah, the mythical drops. And it's interesting because nobody has really been talking about the sword because it feels as though it's still so very mythical and nothing has really percolated on this. But the discussion on the Fractured Staff of Armadil, which is slightly more common, is that if you have the Fractured Staff of Armadil and you do some things, magic can be very competitive with ranged. So it's going to be fun to talk about all this stuff summing up the year in combat meta stuff come December.
A lot of big meta changes this year. It feels like where we went kind of back and forth from magic to range back. Now magic's making another appearance.
Yeah, but you know,
and melee is always there.
You know what the fun part is though? Is that if you really want to, with things like the splintering arrows and whatnot, or even the death spores with Hydrix, you can still make an impressive go with ranged. Even with
I'm sure that's still technically the meta, right? But now magic's just a lot more relevant, actually giving it a a run, I guess, making it a choice.
Yeah. So there's your patch notes for the week. Next up, we're going to talk about an incoming change at some point soon, TM, in the future. We talked about the particles last week in terms of the color and contrast associated with them. And this week, Modstrew announced that there will be a toggle added to Gorvek in the Krosis encounter to turn on the colorblind version of the particles. He says, I prefer to avoid using toggles, but this seems to be the best solution at the time to ensure no one struggles more following the changes. And these are the same ones we previewed last week.
Yeah.
The blue, yellow, and green, and red.
Yeah, you know, this is, I mean, the same as last week, I think.
We talked about the colors and the contrast. And
yeah. And I still, you know, I think that that holds true. But at the end of the day, I'm glad that it's being pursued. And maybe going forward, just, you know, let's keep contrast. Let's keep that in the conversation, because I think you can do a lot more with it than you can just the pure color choices and colorblind filters. Yeah. You can do more with contrast than you can with those.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. And, you know, there's also the question of, at some point, are we going to have enough of these colorblind awareness things that pop up where it might just make sense to have a general colorblind toggle in the game settings, and then if you toggle that on, these things like Gorvek would change, and who knows, or sorry, Krosis would change, and anywhere else that they added options like this. So it's good to see that these changes are making their way into game. We do need to give them that.
Yeah.
And it's a really responsive nature I've found in terms of the evolution of all these fronts, in terms of taking the player feedback on and iterating on it. So that's good to see.
Yeah, it hasn't been months and months, but, you know, a matter of weeks where we've seen feedback kind of start being incorporated, you know, in patch notes. Just a few weeks, you know, after the content's been released, or some other, you know, patch note was released that changed something. And so, yeah, definitely a lot more responsive.
Yeah, and it's wonderful to see. So definitely keep going in this direction. Mm-hmm. All righty. So we also do have God Banter this week in terms of continuation at the full front. And, you know, we were wondering if this was going to keep going on and what exactly this is going to be ramping up about, or when these gods are going to stop talking, because they floated a new idea this week. Sarah Doman is getting very, very tired of seeing all of the corpses being thrown at the Zekar, and how the mortals have, and this is really interesting to see from Sarah Doman, he's starting to come down to earth, I think. Mortals have sacrificed everything to save this world, he says, and then he corrects it to be their world. And then Saren starts to see it and realize what everybody has said all along is that the Elder Gods are a problem for the mortals as much as they are for the gods themselves. And here's the classic line: like it or not, we're all in this together. Armadale joins the conversation and he says, all we can offer is depraved magic to keep their bodies fighting while their souls have passed. What good is saving the world if there's no one left to live in it? Zamorak is starting to see the situation as a stalemate because there's no profit to be had here, no potential expansion, he says, or personal growth. And worst of all, he says, the gods, the four gods here, are obliged to stay there, or they need to face their doom, and he doesn't want to accept this as the fate. So this starts getting the wheels turning in the heads, and it poses a interesting idea of compassion on Sarah Doman's side, where he says that they need to repair all the damage that they've done at any cost. Zamorak isn't going that way and tells Sir Dowin he can martyr himself. But Armadale then says he has a plan. And it hatches on the fact that they don't have the power to destroy the eggs. And Saren clarifies that even with all of them working together, they could probably not even destroy one. But if they were focusing on one instead of all three, the others would likely just hatch in the end. So the plan that comes from Armadale on this is, what if we destroy the eggs? In terms of, rather than having the gods siphon the energy, because they also say that they're bleeding off some of the energy that they're siphoning, what if they direct the energy from the eggs back into the eggs, in effect destroying them? And they say Zamorak says precision required would be ludicrous and the risks are unfathomable. Saren doesn't want to see the eggs destroyed, and here's that, you know, classic dichotomy that we've been seeing, where Saren doesn't want to let anything bad happen to them. But she says, if we sacrifice our ideals for a slim chance at victory, we might as well all be dead, even if we succeed. Sir Dowin asks for an alternate suggestion. Saren says, I don't know yet, but I will not settle for less than a solution that saves everyone. That includes the eggs. Zamorak sees that as naive, and Armadale takes a bit more of a diplomatic approach, saying, for all our sakes, I hope you have something else in mind. The eggs grow in strength. Soon, we will not be able to contain them.
Damn it, Saren.
Yeah.
You gotta be able to make the hard choices. She's my girl, but she's
screwing up. She's a little too close to the eggs, isn't she?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what I'm wondering,
and they're not good. Like, there's nothing good about the elder gods, right? Like,
I personally wouldn't say that.
Well, but they're either like an indifferent, hands-off entity you can't imagine and or even fathom, or they're actively trying to destroy your world.
Right, and so, it's because we can't fathom them that maybe it's just not understood.
Maybe.
But the thing I think that we take from this one is that if the eggs wind up being destroyed, how exactly are the elders going to feel about this? And if that was the case, why didn't we just do this from the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, what's the matter? Like, they're already pissed off, right?
Yeah. And furthermore, if the eggs were to be destroyed now, when does Zaros come back into the picture? We can't just imagine that he's gone for good. What about the Ichlurin connection that needs to be dealt with? I feel like just destroying the eggs, if that's the way that this was going to go in the next couple of weeks, would kind of be a cop-out. Because isn't that what Carapax suggested initially?
Well, that's what he was trying to do.
Yeah, with the Shadow Anima.
Yeah, with the Shadow Anima. That's what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And I don't even really understand what Armadale's whole... To me, it doesn't even make sense that you could destroy him by pulling... I don't understand that. You're siphoning power from him.
Think of it like a feedback loop.
Okay.
You take the power of all three eggs into one, and then when that one gets destroyed, into the next, and then by that time, you can just focus everything to the last one. I don't know.
Yeah, that seems too simple. It should have been...
Yeah.
If this is it, then that's... Not that feels a little lazy.
Yeah, I would be disappointed if this was the end game. Mm-hmm. So, fingers crossed. We'll see what happens, and who knows how many more weeks we have to go on this. And can you believe we've been talking about God dialogue from these four going back to July 26th?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's hard to. I mean, it doesn't really seem that long, but when you think about it, we have had the four fronts, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, it is what it is, and fingers crossed that nothing too horrible happens with this, though.
You know, I almost feel like this is misdirection. I can't see that would be the case. I really think that what we came up with, you know, a while back on that bit is still going to happen. I still think there's going to be a quest coming, like we talked about, that will wrap this up.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be that. It's not going to be that.
And it's
not going to be that, Shane. It's not going to be this.
And the interesting thing is that we changed from last week talking about Zook to now talking about the losses being taken on the Zekar front. Mm-hmm. And a way to, in effect, heal the world, so to speak, with this. So, all right. I'm going to thank some Patreons right now, Patreon supporters, because you guys are wonderful. So this week I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvid Zell, Kristen S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Blocks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, L.O. Matey, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Scott D.S., Seth W., Singer, Stub Eve, The Bears O.P., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V, and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And we have just published our November monthly bit talking about fixing PvP in RuneScape. You can gain access to that one in the entire back catalog of monthly bits for as little as $1 a month. And there's also one more thing this week that we need to talk about in relation to Patreon. We're approaching December. That means it's time for the yearly RSBNB Update Patreon Christmas card. So if you want a Patreon Christmas card signed by the RSBNB Update producers and staff, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Anybody who signs up by November 25th for any of the tiers and provides their shipping info will receive a Christmas card in time for Christmas, unless you're in some very wonderful far-flung region of the world. In case then, I know we had a couple last year that arrived the first week of January, but we'll chalk that up to all the COVID stuff that was going on at the time. But I think November 25th is a safe cutoff that we'll be able to get it to most everybody who wants one. So if you want a RSBNB Update Christmas card, sign up on patreon.com/RSBNB by November 25th. Be sure to tick the box that includes your shipping information, and we'll get that out to you in early December. But we also do have the VIP tier, where you get a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high quality stereo versions of the show. And we also do have the insider tier, where for your $5 a month each week, you'll receive a shout out on the podcast and exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, which is coming very soon, about 6 weeks away from that at this point. Hard to believe.
Hard to believe. Time flies.
Yep. So, and of course, we have the long goal of the Patreon Christmas, or not the Patreon Christmas card. That's happening very soon. But what could also be happening, depending on how many people sign up, is the Patreon postcard, which is a special piece of art that's going to be sent out and printed on a postcard. And should we ever reach that mystical $500 a month target, which would be truly, truly absurd, well, Tannis is going to subject himself to a great range of spice. I mean, Tannis and myself. Sorry, I almost wrote myself out of that.
I was like, hey, wait a minute. This is absurd, but you're crazy if you think I'm doing this alone.
But check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
I should also mention that we do have the roundtable this weekend if you're hearing this on Friday or Saturday. Friday or Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m., 1 a.m. game time Sunday. All this is more is posted at patreon.com/RSBNB. Alrighty, so before we get into our huge list of achievements here, we do have a question this week from Stray. So, They ask, if death costs get removed, do you think Jagex will increase repair costs, assuming we need a gold sink? Yeah, that's a scary thought, isn't it?
Well, so here's probably where we differ, Shane. I don't think we need a gold sink. I'm really not afraid of what we talked about last week all that much, and I don't want to pay more for my repair costs. That being said, I don't think we need to get rid of death cost either. I think having more free death weeks would be, you know, I mean, that would, to me, that's a good compromise.
Yeah, they're wonderful. I use that to learn PVM, intro PVM.
And that's what it's about, right? Like, yeah. you want to have no death cost so that you can learn, because that's when you're dying anyway. Once you know how to do it, you rarely, you know, die.
Unless of course you have a connection problem.
Right.
I saw something absurd posted this week, a 45 million death cost at Solak.
You know, but part of me,
I think there were three EOFs in that picture, a number of switches, a Saren God bow.
So here would be my solution. I don't think the repair cost should go up.
Okay.
But how about you take a durability hit, right? When you die, you take a big hit on your equipment's durability. You know, which in turn would mean that you probably are going to have to repair it. You might have to repair it more, but it wouldn't be a higher cost to that. It's just that you would take a durability hit every time that you died.
Yeah. You know, I think that's a good idea, and I think durability would be a good way to do it, but you'd have to balance it with death costs, maybe lower death costs a bit if that was to happen. And, you know, apparently there is a design document out there talking about what death could be in-game, but we haven't, of course, seen that yet. So, like I said last week, there's a question about whether or not you need to address the idea of inflation, gold inflation in-game, and we talked about the key aspects of that last week in terms of how it could come about. My gut reaction is that we're at a point where we could use an extra gold sink, but I don't think we're at the point where the game economy is inherently unhealthy. So I think there could be some kind of gold sink work done, and it could be, you know, something simple like maybe a few more construction items or something to that effect that everybody would want to get and put into somewhere and have that used so they could show off. But I'm not willing to, and I emphasize that that's a gut feeling, because like we said last week, you need to really start looking at how much cash is coming into game, how much cash is sitting inside the Grand Exchange in terms of items, how much is sitting inside people's banks and not being used, where are the rare items that you have to look at everything from a whole of economy approach on this. So my gut feeling is that there is a need for an extra gold sink, but I don't know how pronounced the problem is. I don't think it's game economy breaking. But to answer the question at hand here, if death costs were to get removed, I think you would have to do something like durability, like you said, and that would see an increase to repair costs. But There's one crucial thing that repair cost leaves out. And for your weapons and for your leg items and for your chest items, most of the people have those augmented. So you just feed divine energy to them. And repair costs aren't actually a problem for many of these items that are augmented. Unless you're talking, of course, about the tier 92 armors, power armors and whatnot. So factoring that all in, if death costs were to get removed, then there likely would need to be something done to increased repair costs in terms of taking a durability hit. And this is all making the assumption that death costs are a significant portion of gold sunk in game. And until we know where that gold is sunk in game, answering as to what we need is really something that's kind of hard to do at this point. So we're kind of taking shots in the dark here, I think. But answering the hypothetical question, then yes, you would need to balance it out somewhere else, I think. And, you know, death costs are something that PVMers always talk about. We did a whole monthly bit on that, I think, last December with the economy of PVM. And I'm kind of on the fence on this. I can see the rationale for removing them, but I can also see it, like you said, where, you know, for the vast majority of people, it's really not that big of a problem. And to give you an idea on this, and I want your opinion on this, you tell me if you've considered this a hindrance at all, Tanis. The current setup that I was using to fight Zook when I did that, if I would have died and if I was using Protect Item, I would have had about a 1.4 million GP death.
That's not a problem.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
You probably made twice that in your chest. Three
yeah.
times that.
Yeah, each Zook run is about 9 to 12 mil. So
it's just not I don't think it's a problem. Look,
I think it's a problem at the very top end if you're, you know,
but you know
streaking
what?
Telos that's, to who knows what, and you're bringing oodles and oodles
I mean, maybe,
of switches.
But the cost is coming from all the switches they take.
Yeah.
Hell, I could take my whole goddamn bank and have $100 million death cost. Great, guys. Whoop-de-doo. Like, that doesn't justify and changing the whole game because you want to take all of your best equipment to fight one boss and show off.
Right. And see, that's the thing I think everybody is missing who's rallying for a death cost reduction is that if you don't take switches, it's not that big of a problem.
Oh.
And David has said this from the very beginning. Every boss in game, except for the very high-end ones, can be done in tier 80 power armor with tier 90 weapons and no switches.
Yeah. And even the high bosses don't require switches, but it's part of the meta. It might make you 1 second faster, so we all have to do it. No, you don't. And if you are going to do it, there was a saying back in the day, right? You're risking it for the biscuit.
Nice.
So you're either doing it or you're not, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's a risk or it ain't.
And you know one thing that I think would be so revealing to post, and this is why we need another data stream at some point in the future? What's the average death cost in-game?
I would love to know that.
Right?
I would love to know that, because I bet you it's people like us, Shane, that are dying most of the time.
And here's a better question. Let's go back to the end of July. What's the average death cost to Karapak, the Glacier, and Zook? Right?
That'd be interesting. Karapak's probably, just from the sheer amount of death.
Now, here's another one. You break it down by God Wars, Elder God Wars dungeon. But let's also look at what's the average death cost for Telos. People just casually doing Telos for Reaper. And you can bet that people who are, you know, streaking Telos and the Glacier up to who knows what number of Enrage, the very high numbers of Enrage, those guys are going to be the outliers.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, if they're streaking those bosses at that high of Enrage, I don't
you're
feel
doing
bad
it for the glory.
That you're getting good drops eventually. If you're doing it that much, I'm not sad that you might have paid 20 mil in death. You probably got a drop that was worth 400 mil through that time.
Yeah, or more.
You know, yeah. I just don't think it's as bad as what it's made out to be.
Right, and that's why we need the data on it. But this is the problem that we have in this community. And when I say this community, I mean the community at large. I'm not singling anyone out. everybody automatically assumes what is said by the three or four or five or half dozen prolific people out there who say something, and then that gets blasted to RuneScape social media, the subreddit and whatnot. That becomes the gospel at the end of the day, and lo and behold, here we are. We need a death cost rework.
Yeah, and the problem with that is what's the saying? It's the tail wagging the dog.
Yep.
You know, and at some point,
that's actually a wonderful way of putting it. And that's actually a movie on my list of movies I need to watch at some point. Wag the Dog.
There you go.
Yeah. But I realize we're off the path here of death costs being removed, but it's a good question because one, it answers a discussion on gold sinks, but on the other one, it raises another question entirely, which I'm happy that we took this detour on that you brought up, is do you even need a death cost rework?
Yeah, because just because, you know, like you said, five or six influencers say we do, I haven't seen the data that says we do.
Yeah.
Maybe we do. I don't know. But they don't know either. And that's the point. Right? At the end of the day, that's the point. None of us have this data.
Right. And you can, of course, look at everybody who does, you know, high-tiered PVM and whatnot and streaks these bosses and tries to do all the fancy schmancy stuff at Virago and Solak and the like. But at the end of the day, you also have to look at the aggregate of the entire game and what the individual RuneScaper is playing for their death cost when they go AFK at a Slayer task and die inadvertently. What somebody who is learning at the first God Wars dungeon does and, you know, doing entry-level Reaper tasks, what happens when they die, that sort of thing. You got to factor the entire thing into this. And this has actually been a really revealing thing that happened this week as well with this is that we put ourselves into bubbles, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, learning all the PVM bosses, I've killed pretty much everything out there except for Solak, Telos, Virago, and the raids that's in game right now. So that was an interesting experience putting myself into that. But another thing that's been talked about this week is with Thaxi, who's just started a new alt doing questing and trying to do some bossing on the side with that. Yeah, bossing on the side, Giant Mole or Glacier. The entire early game experience has been tailored in such a way that if you want to learn PVM, it puts you on a path in order to be able to do that. And with that, there are deaths that are going to happen on that path. And the point of this is that there's lots of people who are at the beginner level of the game and at the mid levels of the game that are not representative of what we're hearing by and large from the community here.
No.
So, no. And
I mean,
I think we just all need to check our biases at the door and preconceptions when we talk about this.
Well, and think about this. Okay, so this would be like Evel Knievel jumping 18 school buses and crashing and saying, you know what? We probably should put a parachute on every Harley Davidson that comes off the line. Because you just never know. It might not make that 18 bus jump.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want somebody out there listening to this. Show me somebody else out there who does PVM and creates content for the community that is willing to say that, A, we don't know if there's inflation in the game, and B, we don't know if we need a death cost rework. I'm pleased that we're taking these opinions because these are not popular opinions on both of them.
Well, no, but I mean, facts don't care about feelings, right? We just don't have the numbers.
Oh my God. You quoted Little Benji.
Well, regardless, it's true. regardless, we need the data, right? At the end of the day, we need the data, and that's something that we are not going to have. We're probably going to have to trust, right? Trust in Timbo, because that's as good as we're probably going to get with this. In Timbo we trust.
And I think with that, we can leave it there right now. All right. So we're going to do some achievements, but before that, let me just get a pick of the week in here, because we this is something I don't know if you would be fortunate enough to experience in Indiana, but what we have been seeing is a large increase in solar activity over the last month and a bit or so, and the sun is at a high active period right now. And there's an app out there that's actually number two on the App Store in the weather category right now. I think it's also on Android. It's called it's just called Aurora, and it's subtitled My Aurora Forecasts and Alerts. And what it will do is it will monitor your location, and if it gets to a point where you have a greater than 10% chance, and you can adjust this, it will send you a notification if you have a chance of seeing the northern lights out there.
Well, that's awesome. I was talking to some friends in Minnesota, and forgive it was they said it was the weekend before last. You were supposed to be able to see them. Yep. I should have been able to see it, but I couldn't because of cloudy skies.
Yeah,
or whatever. So that's really, really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just lighting up about a week ago a lot around here. There was too much city light in order to be able to see from where I was at. But you look on Twitter and you look online, you can just see a whole host of pictures for anybody who even just goes a tiny, tiny bit out of the city, and you get this notification about a half hour or so before it arrives, because the way it works is that the electrified particles from the sun hit the magnetic field of the Earth, and based on where they're currently hitting and where the rotation of the Earth is going, it can be forecast about where is going to see high activity in the next half hour to an hour or so. And with the result of that, you can just pop open the app, and it will show you with a nice color contour map of where the aurora is most active. Like, for example, right now it appears to be most active over northern Alberta and, of course, in the territories and whatnot, which is what you'd expect around this time of year. But I know last month we had a case where going all the way down, even to places like Vancouver Island and into Washington State, we're actually able to see the northern lights here.
Well, that's awesome. Did you happen to get a chance to see the planetary alignment this week, Shane?
I did.
I couldn't. Can you believe that my blind ass actually saw?
Oh yeah,
Jupiter and Venus. It's bright and sad. Yes, it was so cool.
Yeah,
so cool.
I also have an app for that as well. Maybe we could do that as pick of the week next week too.
There we go. Hell yeah.
It also works very nicely with the Apple Watch if you have one of those too. But kind of getting ahead of myself on that one. So
nice.
That's the pick of the week. You can find it in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. All right, ready to strap in for some achievements here. I got the boatload of them. You got the tail end.
Yep, I got the dinghy.
I got the water. We're going to go. Just gonna have a drink of water, then we'll get going. It is Double XP Live after all. All right, so starting off on November 10th, we had God Shaman with 99 Mining, Iron VSS with 99 Thieving, Curtains with 99 Construction, Max Quest Points with 99 Mining, Schnetz, 99 Farming, Tenny Kiot, 99 Firemaking, Zabros with Magic and Attack on the 10th. Then on the 9th, we have Ali the Wise with 99 Smithing, Delta Polo with 99 Cooking, Hound Ears with 99 Agility, Omega with 200 million Strength XP earned. Then we also have Schnetz with 99 Invention, Simply Skills with 99 Dungeoneering, Tanny Kiot again with 99 Construction, Uber Plastic got 99 Cooking and Magic on the 9th, Then we have Vapor 13579 with 99 Magic and 99 Smithing. Then we have Delta Polo with 99 Agility on the 8th. Free Milk, not getting any free milk from this one, got 99 Thieving and 99 Slayer. Fritz Krieg got 99 Woodcutting. Greeny-ish got 99 Construction. J1, J2, J3, otherwise known as Trekkie, got 120 Herblore. Lord Deluxe got 99 Prayer. And this other name that's in Clan Quest, named Quests or Shit, got 120 Summoning. River Design got 99 Crafting. Simply Skills got 99 Thieving. And Up the Iron 05 got 120 Herblore. Then moving on to the 7th, we have Alio Sith with 99 Firemaking and Ali the Wise with 99 Firemaking, Hunter, Crafting, Fletching, and Divination. Delinda EST got 120 Herblore. Greeny-ish got 99 Smithing and 99 Firemaking. LOL Monster got 99 Farming. Luke Totodile got 120 Mining, also on the 7th. Then Max Quest Points, continuing on the 7th, got 99 Agility, Smithing, Construction, Hunter, Fletching, and Thieving. Snowlight got 120 Farming and 120 Invention. Then Tanny Kiant got 99 Divination. The Outdoors got 99 Runecrafting. Uber Plastic got 99 Construction. Vapor 13579 got 99 Cooking. And Zodiac Hyde got 120 Summoning, rounding out the 7th.
Right on. So, very nice achievements. Moving on to November 6th, we have Alio Sith with 99 Summoning. We have Darkest Night with 99 Hunter. We have Delta Polo with 99 Divination. Delta Polo with 99 Smithing. Grayish with 99 Prayer. Grayish with 99 Crafting. And 99 Agility. Then we have Ishk with 120 Attack and Strength. We have Lazy Colonel with 99 Slayer. And Max Quest Points with 120 Herblore. We have Robbie with 200 mil Summoning.
That hurts.
Seth Roth with 99 Summoning. Thaxi with 120 Construction. Under King with 120 Construction. And then moving on to the 5th, we have Delta Polo with 99 Invention. We have Isaiah with 120 Invention. We have Pony Picker with 120 Summoning. And we have Tanny Keat with 99 Agility. And The Outdoors with 99 Farming. Then we have Expros with 99 Farming, Strength, and Summoning. Very nice job, all.
Closing out Chapter 1 of Double XP November 2021.
Yep. Breathe.
Breathe. Breathe. All right, we're going to talk about what we've been doing, but before we do that, we hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Woo!
And to celebrate this, we have a new channel trailer that we're going to preview now here on the podcast. Think of this as a bit of a clip show, 2021 RSBNB update in focus, or our highlights of 2021 of things we've covered. Let's have a listen. This is RSBNB update, and we're here to talk about the 20th anniversary of RuneScape, a game we all play, a game we all love. Let's dive in. This week on RSBNB Update, the lore walls come crashing down with Azanadra's Quest, the first in what can only be described as a RuneScape visual novel, because the archaeology slogan was "Dig Deep, War is Coming." But, you know, at that time, nobody really knew what that was referring to, but lo and behold, here we are, and this is why we obviously need to dig deep to excavate the city of Sentistan.
I mean, you know, I had a few, let's call them VI issues, with the mini game, and I mean, by all rights, I really think it is VI issues, and it really was kind of visual clutter.
It felt like what we did in these quests had a actual impact on the world,
and now we're just watching movies
about, let's say, if you do the Elder Gold Good Wars dungeon, and then in a year, you're going to do a City of Centristan. You're basically watching a Discovery documentary about how the eggs were stolen.
Didn't Mad Warden joke about putting it on the fridge, too? Smart fridges? Yeah. There we go.
You probably could do that, actually.
In the kitchen, AFK something. It'll be fun.
I don't know, but wait till there's a smart toaster and we actually can get on the damn thing.
It's gonna happen.
While Mad Warden has also announced his departure from the company in a tweet, in a series of tweets, actually, on his Jagex Warden account, in general, I said you helped RS grow up and take that next step that it's needed to take for years. This is mission accomplished, and you will be missed. And we're just gonna jump into the Zekar Front, Inferno, the whatever we want to call it in this stage, the full front. You know, there's been a whole myriad of names this week, hasn't there? Tanis, what do you want to call it?
I think we should call it Full Frontal.
It's Samantha B.
I think that encapsulates RSVMB update in a nutshell of what we are.
It's perfect.
A bit of a little bit of fun along the way, lots of serious discussion, lots of analysis, lots of opinion, lots of straight talk, as of course you heard around the Mod Warden bits, and even as we just heard earlier in this episode, and of course a lot of fun along the way for each of these ones. So this was a bit of a clip show of the year, you could say, and it's just a bit of a preview of what somebody could expect RSBNB update to be like if they were to watch one of our episodes. And the reason I was able to play this on the podcast rather than just say, here, go watch this video, is because this video was actually designed to be audio first. Most things you watch on YouTube are 100% video first. If you're not watching the video alongside them, you're going to be lost. But everything we had in there was an accurate sampling of what update is, and you could just listen to it, and that's why I felt comfortable sharing it here on the show. But the only thing the audio listeners missed were a couple subtitles along the way. And I was actually really pleased with how this turned out. So thank you to everybody who I bounced ideas off of over the last week or so on this. So that should be up on YouTube by the time you guys are seeing the podcast this week. So. All right. Cool. What was your favorite part?
Oh, man. It's, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to tell. I love the blending, the way that the serious points went along with the music. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I don't know. Am I biased if I pick myself and Sirion?
No, that's allowed. It's allowed. 100% allowed. But, you know, this is where I'll transition into what have we been up to on RS, because this is something I've been up to this week. What have you been doing on RS this week?
So I mostly I planned on doing mining for double XP. It's something that I've just been doing. I don't have the goods stocked up to do farming, which is the only 120 but it's the only legit 120 I have left. So I've just been doing mining. It has to be done eventually. I figure it's best to do it on double XP. And that's, I've been just mining Animica, and I'm running it with Stone Spirits and Perfect Plus and my mining outfit, you know, all that good stuff. But that's pretty much what I've been doing this week. It's what I've been on. I've been mining. Of course, you know, I don't leave home without my Spore Hammer.
Yeah.
And all that fun stuff.
I was meaning to ask you how that's going. Have you made any of the arrows with that in terms of how much those are going for?
I haven't, but I'm up to about 5K of the arrowheads.
Holy cow. Holy cow. Okay.
And I'm debating on, like, I mean, if it's a good price, then of course I would sell them, but I'm going to have to get 120 fletching someday too. So
aren't broads the best
for
that?
Hold on. But wouldn't these be a higher XP?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't know.
The reason I ask about that is that I've been of course doing the woodcutting side of it with the splintering arrows and the tips and the elders and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And the splintering arrows have fallen to below ground exchange value. Whereas on the first week or so of release, they were about 8K each. So I was wondering if you had any idea what the death spores were at.
I don't, but that's not good.
Because that tells me that A, people are sleeping on them, and B, there's probably a lot of elder woodcutting and just woodcutting in general happening in the game, bringing these in. And because people are sleeping on them, it's pushing the prices down.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a good time to switch back to mining, because I thought the elder wood was starting to come down, and
that's still going for around 2,000 each.
See, I thought it was higher than that when I was selling it, but
it's about 2,000 now. Yeah.
All right, but you're just not getting the extra from the arrows.
Yeah. Just looking here. Death spore arrows with elder headless arrows and the tips, 300 XP for 15. Whereas broad bolts are 30 XP for 10.
And these are essentially free.
Yeah, we have to look into this, but that might be an interesting way of training fletching. Boy, that would be a throwback
for free.
That would be a throwback. As I remember, the first fletching training I did was creating bronze arrows, and splintering arrows give the same fletching XP as the death spores. So, all right. Anything else?
That's it for me, Shane.
Okay. As for me this week, I did some Krosis on the weekend.
Nice.
I mentioned I made about 20 mil from, 4 quiver fragments.
And
we got a, crypt bloom top. That was 156 mil split.
Split.
We had 4 people in the group, so 156 times 4.
Damn, that stuff is still super high then.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, daddy.
So Krosis is good money still.
Yep, and you still seem to fall off a... You could fall off a truck into just a pile of crap, come out smelling like a rose every week.
What?
You got the best luck somehow.
It wasn't me that got it. Somebody else on the team did.
You're on the team. You got the split. That counts. It was your luck that probably caused it anyway.
I don't know. But
you got the Midas touch, Shane. Everything you touch turns to gold.
Let's not talk about it because it might disappear if that's the case. but as for double XP, I did my usual 2 Slayer test and then I got bored.
It's not enough challenge for it anymore, I guess. I guess you'll have to start doing, the camel. The camel critters, and
rippers,
the mammoths, and the rippers. Maybe. Yeah.
The tasks, if you were wondering what they were, it was a dark beast task.
Well, that one is boring, but it's quick.
Yeah. And then after that, I got gargoyles.
Well, once again, boring, but super quick.
Yeah. I just can't find the tasks that resonate with me.
Well, those you should be doing every day on top of your abbeys. Oh. You've got 3 helmets. You'd be doing those every day.
Oh, so you're saying do Dark Beast, Abyssals, and Gargoyles daily?
Yeah. Every day.
So that's how people do it?
Well, I mean, that's what I did. Every day. I mean, it's not all that I did,
right,
but I did those every day because I had the mask. I could refresh them every day.
Right. I can see how the XP starts to line up with that. And, you know, it might just be fundamentally different ways that we appreciate the game, because every Slayer task you said that you've liked, I have hated.
Yeah, that is funny, too.
Oh, well, we'll have the round table this weekend, and I'm sure we'll have lots of fun discussion about what is the optimal Slayer task, because that's what I'll be doing there. That's happening on Sunday at 1 a.m. game time, Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern. I think we'll open this up to everybody since it's double XP after all. So just join the Discord at rsbnb.com/Discord. Also subscribe to the podcast. We're on any number of podcast listeners out there. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, your favorite Amazon A devices, Pocket Cast and Stitcher as well. But of course, YouTube as well at youtube.com/RSBNB. It's where I post the video version and a few nibbles throughout the week, and alongside that new channel trailer if you're not subscribed. So hopefully you don't see that, because that means you're subscribed. But if you're not subscribed, do give us a subscribe. It greatly helps the channel out. And I think with that, we can call this episode of RSBNB Update done. So see you next week, everyone. Take care.
See ya.